thank you guys for having me. And this is round two. I was here last week. In about 15, 20 minutes, we'll get you up, get you moving, doing some drills and stuff in the field here. But we're going to talk through some running form stuff. So basically my existence, so I'm a sports chiropractor, and which is basically a fancy way of saying that I'm a musculoskeletal doctor. And I mostly treat runners. About 80% of my practice is runners. And as Eric mentioned, I work with USATF, and I've traveled internationally with them and worked a lot of the major stateside meets with them. And a lot of this stuff, so last year I wrote a book called Faster Without Fail. It's available on Amazon, and it's a book about running form. And so we're going to talk through some basic principles from this book. And basically the origin of this book is that, you know, in the office with treating injuries, there would be a lot of cases where some athletes just weren't responding well to some traditional measures of treatment, and you know, get them on the treadmill or see videos of them racing and just realize, like, I did not think that they would be running that way. So I realized the industry as a whole, whether it be, you know, coaching, therapists, strength and conditioning coaches, doctors, just did not do a good job with coaching up running form in terms of isolating some of the issues and some quick poignant tips to improve running forms, which we're going to go over today. The interesting thing about running injuries is that the very things that cause running injuries are also the same things that slow you down. So even if you're not injured, it behooves us to every single day do something to improve our form. Just like a baseball player does something every single day, or a golfer something every single day to improve their swing, you know, their batting percentages, et cetera. And running, we need to craft our skill every single day. And this is kind of a hard concept for us to grasp, because running comes so natural to us. Like, you basically, nobody has to teach you how to do it. It just comes natural. It's based on two reflexes within your central nervous system. So you don't actually have to be taught how to do it. You know, at 2-3 years old, you basically just kind of stumble into some running, and basically nobody ever had to teach you how to do that. So I think that in our sport, we sort of, you know, if you pick up a baseball bat, well, you sort of have to be taught how to do that. But in running, you never really formally have to be taught how to do that. You just sort of join the team and start running. But, you know, this lecture is basically about, let's think about some of the principles of running mechanics. Let's break it down to some of the important components and what are some things that we need to focus on, okay? So that's where we're going to kind of talk a little bit about today. So let's kind of just start. We're going to go from the top down. So we're going to start with the head, and we're going to go from the top down. Let's just kind of talk a little bit about running mechanics. So with running mechanics, give me an idea of what your head posture should be like. So this will be a little bit of an interaction. So if you want to talk, raise your hand. Basically, with running mechanics, what should your head be doing? Yep. Should be still, right? So a lot of times at the end of races, you see people kind of bobbing their head back and forth. They're trying to basically churn their shoulders and their arms to create energy. And that's obviously ineffective, because if you just do this, that does nothing to improving your actual speed and cadence. The other reason why a lot of people kind of move their neck and their head when they're hurting at the end of races is that it hurts. And you've heard the term writhing in pain. So if somebody gets punched in the face and they just stand there, you think to yourself, man, that must be somebody that's really tough. But if somebody gets punched in the face and they go, oh, and they kind of fold down, well, then that means that obviously they had some pain with that. When we move a lot of times in weird ways at the end of races, it shows that we're in pain. And a lot of times at the top level, that's a tell, right? So if you're watching a race and you see somebody and they're doing all these odd movements, subconsciously, we all sort of know that they are really struggling inside. They're really hurting. So sometimes when we're watching a race, you know, if their hands are moving weird, their shoulders are moving, you can clearly tell that somebody's hurting, and you're thinking to yourself, that person's probably going to lose to the person that has better form. So in subconsciously, that sort of makes sense. But anything else? So with regards to head posture, what else should, so give me an idea on where your head should be in terms of relative to your shoulders. Anybody? Yep.
Like your chin up, not looking at the ground.
Yeah, so you should basically be, your eyes should be fixed about 20 meters in front of you, right? And if your chin is up, that's a little high, so you want to keep it kind of neutral. But where should your ear be relative to your shoulder? So if you looked at somebody from the side, your ear should be directly over the shoulder. How much does the head weigh? Does anybody know off the top of their head? It weighs 10 pounds, 10 to 12 pounds, right? And so if you hold a 10-pound bowling ball right here, it's not that big of a deal. But the farther away you move it from the center of mass, the more it weighs, right? Now it becomes 20, 30 pounds. So if you're running and your head is directly over your shoulder, or your ear is directly over your shoulder, that just weighs 10 pounds. But if you're like this, now that's 20, 30 pounds. And that's obviously more strenuous to hold upright versus here. And a lot of times, even at this super high level, you would be shocked at how many people jut their chin out. I was just showing my brother-in-law this morning. He's Brazilian, so he didn't know this video, but I was showing the finishing kick to Quincy Hall. Do you guys remember last year in the Paris Olympics when Quincy Hall won the 400? You should watch the last 50 meters of that race. It is hilarious. He literally is running like with his chin out like this. Like he's like running like this with his teeth and his chin out like that. It's hilarious. Obviously he's running very inefficient, but he's obviously just, he's gonna win the race and he's just gritting it out. So it's super important to understand that your ear should be directly over your shoulder. Okay? Any questions on that? So a lot of times, before, like when you're in the race, if you're kind of stooping forward, so when I'm racing, if I'm wearing sunglasses, I kind of follow the sweat lines of my sunglasses. So if I have sweat that comes down into the inside of my sunglasses, I know that I've tipped my head forward. So like, for instance, if I'm running a marathon, that's a cue that my head posture isn't where it should be. Because if my head posture is neutral, the sweat's just going to come straight down my face and it's not going to drip onto my glasses. So that's one cue you can do. So, but because it's a lot of times it's hard to tell like where your ear is relative to your shoulder in space, but it's farther back than you might think. So you kind of want to be chest up, have that barrel chest, chin back a little bit. It's a little bit farther back than you might think. When you're coming into the part of the race where it's really starting to hurt, like halfway point, two thirds through the race, this is a good thing to sort of check. Just to be up, chin back a little bit, just to make sure you're getting proper airway, your head's not weighing a little bit too much, you're a little bit more efficient. Okay, so that's a good cue. So let's talk about arms. What should your arms be doing when you're running? So kind of give me some arm mechanics. Parallel to the floor? Okay, we'll flesh that out. Anybody else? What should your hand posture be? Yep. Okay, so he says elbow at 90. Anybody else? So basically, is it harder to swing my arm if it's like this or if it's like this? Which one's harder to swing? When the lever is shortened, right? So if you swing your arm like this, the lever is long, now it's harder to swing. So now the lever is shortened, now it's easier to swing. Whenever we lock at 90 and we kind of start to create a little bit more torque at 90 degrees, what that indicates to me as a provider is that you have a thick or you have a stiff rib cage. Basically, you're trying to open up the rib cage a little bit because your mid back is really, really tight. That's what that indicates to me. So your arms actually in a 5K for cross country should actually be slightly less than 90. So at about 45 degrees or so, 35 degrees. And that's because it's an easier lever to move when it's like this. If you watch a marathon, a lot of the elite East Africans that are up there, their arms are super tucked in and they're doing very little work, okay? So talk to me about arm swing. Give me some feedback on arm swing. The mechanics of arm swing. The heat got you guys today, huh? So arm swing is obvious, right? You're like, I'm not even gonna say this because it's so easy. It should obviously go front to back, but it's amazing how many people kind of cross their body. And again, they're doing that because one, they're unstable in the core. So if you watch yourself run or race and your arms are swinging side to side, your core is instantly weak. There's no way that you have a strong enough core to sustain that load because otherwise you wouldn't drag the arm across. It basically should go front to back. So that's part of the reason why I got tattoos in the back of my elbow is when I'm racing, I focus on just driving my arm straight back. Now, what's one of the reasons why I drive my arm straight back? Can anybody figure that out? Yep. It propels you. What is, if I drive my arm back this way, what is that yoked to? What is that connected to? Yeah, your legs do what your arms do, right? So if I drive my arm back this way, that sends a cue to my brain to activate the opposite glute to push off with more force. If I swing to the side like this, the brain does not get the cue to further enhance the activation of the hips, which is obviously very important for running. Okay, so you want to make sure that your arms are kind of front to back, not crossing midline, and then the hands are relaxed. So what should the thumb be doing? Should the thumb be kind of pointed up or to the side? What should the thumb be doing? Should be up, right? Because if it's to the side, what are you gonna do? You're gonna cross your body. If it's up, you're gonna go like this. But what's one of the main reasons why I wanna drive my arm back? straight back. Okay, this is a little bit tricky here. Can somebody flesh this out for me? So when we're running, what I'm saying is when you're running, you're focusing on just driving the arm back and not forward. Why is that? So we talked about pushing off with the glute. There's another reason. You start to move sideways, right? But what about the front to back? Why straight back? It's because when your arm comes back, if you just try this later when we're doing the drills, when you bring your arm straight back, everybody's pecs in the front are stronger than the back of their shoulder. So when you bring your arms back, your arm just pops easily forward. It's free energy. So when you drive it back, it easily just swings forward. So you don't have to create any momentum forward. So that's why you're trying to utilize the body mechanics for free elastic energy. So when you're running, thumbs up, hand relaxed. You know, we always say just kind of keep the hand relaxed, like you're holding like a delicate flower or something like that. And then you're driving your arm straight back, just like this, in a shortened lever. Okay, I kind of think like there's somebody behind me, and I'm like poking them in the side kind of thing. That's sort of what I think about. But basically, the mechanics should just be like that. Does that make sense? All right, so now walk me through what the hips should be doing. So relative to the rest of the body. So when we are running, if we drew a plumb line from our ear down to our ankles, there should be a straight line between the ear, shoulder, side of the hip, knees, and ankle. When we run, basically we lean forward at the ankle. Most of us, when we start running, if you watch a kid, they'll lean forward at the waist and then they'll start to push off that way. But what we want to do is we want to have about a 5-degree tilt forward from the ankles. So you basically should have a straight line from your ear all the way down to your ankles, and your hips should be forward. Now, again, most of you, if you watch yourself at the end of races, everybody breaks in the hips as they get late in the race. And that's one of the things that if you watch professional runners do, they really force their hips forward, almost like somebody tied a lasso around their waist and they're pulling forward. Because what that does is that activates the glutes over the hamstrings. Okay? So there's a reason for this. If your back is kind of arched like this, there's a weird neurological connection. Now, again, you're not going to really hear this many other places, but this was one of the hacks with USATF. There's a weird neurological connection between the mid-back mechanics here, where your rib cage is, and the activation of your glutes. When your rib cage drops like that, you instantly shut off your glutes. It's just a weird neurological thing. So one of the cues that they give sprinters and jumpers and obviously distance runners is keeping that mid-back up and keeping the hips pressed forward and really thinking about that constantly throughout the run and the race. Because the minute that you slouch, instantly the glutes shut off. And that's obviously pretty important, the glutes are. So one of the other cues that I put in the book is that you want to imagine that somebody tied a string to the top of your head and they're pulling up on it. So that kind of gets you out of that slumped position where you're deactivating the glutes and then your obviously head position is in the wrong position like we talked about. Okay, we all still with me? Don't worry, we'll get you up moving soon. So mid-back matters, right? So up like barrel-chested, obviously we're trying to get air in. We don't want to be hyper-exaggerant, you know, but we want to be like nice and upright, chin back, drive the arms straight back, and then keep the thumbs up. Now pushing the hips forward, like I said about tying the lasso around the waist and basically pulling the hips forward. So that's the hip mechanics there. Now we're gonna kind of get into a little bit of the hip and knee mechanics. Now, going back to what I talked about earlier, and this is what we're going to really hone in on when we get to the drills, but if you think about most people's leg mechanics, and then this is where I really have the biggest beef within the industry, is that most people's legs mechanics, when they're pushing off, so say I'm here, I'm pushing off to that flight phase, most people will bend their knee, and then they'll drive their leg forward, okay? That's the vast majority of you, I can almost guarantee it, even at a super high level, unless they've actually gone through filming and gait analysis and trained this out, most people do it this way. Can anybody guess why that's the case? Again, most people bend the knee and then drive the leg forward. Can anybody guess why that's the case? Yep. Yeah, well, I gave you the answer earlier, right? So a longer limb is harder to swing in space versus a shorter limb. So your brain's not dumb. Most distance runners are not super strong like sprinters, right? Because our events don't require us to have as much muscle mass. So as the event goes on, we don't have the strongest hips and pelvis. So as the event goes on, like a 5-mile race or a 3-mile race or whatever, what we'll do is we'll shorten the lever and we'll swing the leg forward. But if you watched a world-class sprinter, they're going to go from here to here in one foul swoop. They don't have time to bend and then drive, because then they would be too behind on their steps. Okay, so this is really important concept. This is called a two-phase leg swing. One, two. We're going to try to break this, break you guys of this with some of the drills later. The one-phase leg swing is what you want. So when the leg leaves the ground, you want to instantly drive your knee forward. It seems super simple, but almost nobody does it. Everybody kind of does that in here. And the reason why I know this is that if you look at pictures of, like Olympic pictures of like the 1500 or the 5K, when somebody's in a stance phase, meaning their leg is fully planted on the ground, the swing leg, which is the leg that's driving forward, is already in front of the stance leg. Most runners are like this when they're on full weight. Their swing leg is already behind them. But at the high level, you want your swing leg in front of you. Part of the reason why we want to do this is cadence. Can anybody tell me what is sort of the optimal cadence? Cadence is foot strikes per minute in terms of running. That's a little low, but somewhat close. Anybody got it? Foot strikes per minute. What's a good kind of number to kind of be closer to? 180 is a great number. And one of the reasons why we think of the 180 mark is that our tendons, like the Achilles tendon or our hamstring, can basically pulse at 3 hertz, which is basically 3 times per second. So if you do the math, 3 times 60 is 180. So that's why we're around there. Now, on your runs, when you're doing easy runs, most of you at some point when you're kind of just out on an easy 5 miler or something like that, not when you're doing tempo runs or workouts or races, but on your easy runs, you should count your cadence. Just literally clock a minute on your watch and count how many times you strike the ground on 1 foot within a minute. Should be right around 85 to 90 per foot. Now, if it's lower than that, what are some things that you can do to improve it? So say your cadence is the 160 that she alluded to earlier. What are some things that you can improve it to get it to 180?
Shorten your stride.
Just shorten your stride, exactly. So it's literally you're just shortening your stride, contacting the ground numerous times, more within that minute. A lot of times people will come and be like, oh my God, your legs are so long, you're so tall, you must be so fast because of that. And it's like, no, it's actually a disadvantage to be tall because it's harder to get my leg to swing through. The average high-level runner that has a world record is actually markedly shorter than I am, and it's because it is easier for them to swing their legs through if they have the same amount of power output. Does that make sense? So one of the reasons why we talked about the two-phase form, though, is when we're here and we do one, two, it's harder for our leg to get through quick enough for the 180 foot strikes a minute. Another easy fix you can do to improve your cadence is to do like all-out uphill sprints just for like 8 to 10 seconds. That instantly kind of cleans up your form and makes it so you're going to be a little bit more efficient with this one phase versus two phase. If I filmed you just running across the grass here, and then I filmed you running all out on an uphill, your leg mechanics will be completely different. You will actually naturally improve this. But your brain is obviously obsessed with efficiency, so it's not going to run that way for the full 5K. So we have to teach the brain how to utilize these principles of speed mechanics, of sprinting mechanics, when we're racing. And so we'll kind of go through some of the drills that'll do that. So when we're here and then we want to drive the leg straight forward, one of the things that we want to think about, now we're going to kind of move down to the foot, is we want to think about bringing the toes up towards the shin. So this is one of the things that I'm really, really obsessed with regards to running mechanics. Can anybody give me a reason why I want you to bring your toes to your shin, which the fancy term for that is dorsiflexion? Yep. That absolutely. So basically because there are, so whenever we look at, like if we're going to, like I said, like watch some of the film, world championships and Olympic films and things like that, you're going to see a lot of people have their foot parallel to the ground, and a lot of people will kind of have their foot lazily like this. So you'll notice that the people that are running faster are going to have their foot kind of hiked up like that. But that still doesn't quite explain, that just explains the results, doesn't explain why it actually is more efficient. Little bit better answer, yeah. So it changes the way that you land in terms of how you're striking. So if I come through like this and then my foot is lazy, then I'm going to be more likely to land in front of my center of mass. So if I said my leg is coming through like this and I land here or I land here, which one is more efficient? Right here or right here, which one is actually more efficient? So directly under my hip or in front of my hip? Directly under, right? So it all sort of makes sense. If you do a gait analysis and you see somebody landing in front of their center of mass and then drag their leg through like this and push over it, that's a, you can draw a triangle. So a triangle tire is actually really inefficient. A real, like an actual tire, a circular tire, is basically where the center mass is directly under, or the contact point is directly under the center mass. So we want our foot to contact the ground at one point under our center of mass. If my foot is lazy like this, it's likely to catch the ground prior to the center mass. If I bring my toes up towards my shin, we create a clearance. Now I'm going to land directly under the center mass. But there's a better answer. Does anybody have it? It basically pretenses the calf and Achilles. So what you're doing is, if my foot is relaxed, see how relaxed my Achilles is when I land? So I've generated no free energy. But if I bring my toes to my shin, now all of a sudden my Achilles is taut, it's tight. So when I hit the ground, it just pops off with free energy. So if we're like this, we have to land, generate torque on the Achilles, which takes time, and then push off with energy. Rather than having the Achilles pre-tensed in the calf so that right when I strike the ground, it just explodes off with free energy. The secondary reason for this is your hip flexors, and we're going to see this in a second when we get you up, your hip flexors are yoked or tied to the shin. So basically, if I wanted to step over this bottle, if I let my foot be lazy, I'll catch the bottle. But if I want my foot to clear the bottle, I have to bring my toes to my shin and I know I'm going to clear the bottle. Does that make sense? So our hip flexors are yoked to our shin. So when we're here and then we push off, we immediately bring our toes to our shin. That forces our hip to drive forward and then gets you out of this slow backswing. Does that make sense? So bringing the toes up is one of the simplest hacks you can do to fix that swing mechanics of the legs. I know it just threw a lot at you, but we're going to put it in action now. Does anybody have any questions thus far? Because we're about to get up and do some drills.
Dr. Leo here. Be sure to check out my new book, Faster Without Fail, Your Guide to Overcoming Injuries and Running Faster Than Ever. It is now available on Amazon. You could read reviews on the Amazon. You can check out what other people have said about it. But basically, if you want to revolutionize your running form and better understand how to stay injury-free within the sport, this is your guide. Feel free to reach out and let us know what you think of the book. I would love to hear your feedback. But again, please check it out on Amazon. Faster Without Fail. Appreciate it. Dr. Leo here. If you want to catch me in another setting, be sure to check out my YouTube page, Running Rehab, where you will find exercises on how to stay healthy with running, how to improve your running form, and a bunch of other tips and tricks on how to get over common injuries. So again, Running Rehab.